From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
The one thing that unites all Black Greek letter organizations are that we're all committed to academic and scholarship, we're all committed to community uplift, and we're all committed to the concepts of brotherhood and sisterhood. And even though we have different colors, different letters, different missions and national programs, the one thing that we all share is this commitment to uplift the community. And oddly enough, and I need to do a lot more research on this because I'm not sure who said that this is the thing that should unite us all, but if you ask many members of Black Greek letter organizations, many of them know the poem Invictus, and they can recite it. You know, a lot of members can recite it. Not all members, but a lot of members can recite it off the top of their head. And so I just thought that was a really unique way to pay homage to the unity that ultimately, at its grassroots, kind of unites all of us together.
Jared Henderson, producer-director of Beyond This Place, the visual history of African-American fraternities and sororities. African-American fraternities and sororities have played an important role in the development of African-American identity for over 100 years. Beyond This Place is an independent documentary project that examined the rich culture of African-American Greek letter organizations. Born during the Jim Crow era of American history, African-American fraternities and sororities have helped to shape the social, political, and cultural consciousness of post-emancipated America. 42 years after emancipation, the establishment of a self-determined group of college-educated African-American men would create energy which yielded self-determination and a desire to prosper through the challenges of segregated America. The concept of an African-American fraternity born out of racial discrimination and isolation on college campuses was spread throughout America with the establishment of other fraternities and sororities, using the motto to create organizations that were dedicated to the development of its members and the African-American community. I'm Johnny O'Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Beyond This Place, with producer-director Jared Henderson, In Black America.
When I was doing my master's in journalism at the University of Missouri, I decided that one of the topics I was interested in looking at was the relationship between representation and stereotyping, where the two terms come from, how can they exist together homogeneously, where can we, how do we figure out what falls into which category. And so for me, looking, I use Black Greek letter organizations as my topic of interest, specifically talking about the limited representation of media that existed. And so for me, it was a way to kind of look at the scope of Black Greek life, what that meant, and to identify what are some things that contribute to concepts like groupthink within Black Greek letter organizations. Why can you have a member of Kappa Alpha Psi who the semester before he crossed is the most non-gaming, can't, you know, get a date to save his life, and then after he crossed the fraternity, be the ladies' man on campus. And so it was just talking about those different energies and that surround our organizations. And really for me, it's also looking at the organizations, where they've been, where they currently are, and where they're headed to in the future.
Beyond This Place is a project that seeks to validate the important past and contemporary history of African-American Greek-led organizations in a never-before-seen collection of images. A documentary style of photography explores the depth of past organizational traditions, contemporary challenges, and future aspiration for the collection of 9 historically African-American fraternities and sororities. Through personal stories, academic analysis, photograph, and archival footage, Beyond This Place seeks to examine the history of BGLOs while at the same time posing a complex question. What is the role of African-American Greek letter organizations in the 21st century? Born in St. Louis, Missouri, Jared Henderson is an award-winning photographer, videographer, editor, and filmmaker. He has spent time telling stories with the Detroit Free Press and the Austin American Statesman newspapers. As a child growing up, he was always fascinated with images and travel. At 19, his father gave him his first photography book with a note that read, quote, "Every young photographer must have a copy of his work," end of quote. Recently, In Black America spoke with Jared Henderson.
You know, what's interesting is as I turn on television, I'm looking at all these internet news programs. I see a lot of people I went to school with and, you know, going and speaking at the White House and through BET and all these other different news programs. And it's kind of interesting. But the thing that a lot of people don't realize is that that area has had issues for a very, very long time in terms of race relations, in terms of the socioeconomic gap. And although I'm technically from North County, and I went to the Hazelwood School District, if anybody's familiar with that. But the folks that are there, I definitely went to school with some of them, were friends with a lot of them. And there's a lot of issues that go beyond just what we're seeing play out over the last several months that's circled around the Mike Brown incident. These are systematic issues that have been around for a very long time.
Tell us, what was life like growing up in the St. Louis area?
Sure, I love the Lou. I love the Lou. I'm a military brat to the second power.
Okay.
So both of my parents, you know, moved us around a lot, North Carolina, overseas and such. And so I really got a chance to grow up and learn a lot and develop a lot in St. Louis. And going from there and growing up there really helped me a lot in terms of perspective and learning how to deal with people and learning how to transition from different environments. And so, you know, for me to go from St. Louis to Virginia to Arizona to Detroit to Texas, I mean, it's all been one big journey that kind of all runs together, because the one thing that remains consistent is that there's good people everywhere. And I think that's what St. Louis really taught me to relish.
Tell us about getting that first camera.
You know, it's funny. My first camera was an AE-1 program Canon camera that my father purchased in order to take pictures of me when I was a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I left St. Louis, I ended up going to Virginia to finish out my junior year of high school, and I eventually graduated there. And one of the things that my school did not have at the time was a photography elective.
Okay.
And so it was the first thing I signed up for when I moved to Virginia, and I was so excited. And so that was the first camera, and ever since then, it's been a wrap for me. I mean, I really love graphic design and art and painting and drawing, but photography and subsequently videography has stuck with me ever since.
Now, everyone has to have some type of mentor or someone that they want to kind of emulate to get to where they are. Who were some of the photographers that you were trying to emulate back in the day?
Absolutely. When I was about 13, my father gave me a book by Monita Sleet Jr., who was a photographer with Ebony Magazine for a very long time. He's most famous for the picture of
Coretta
Scott
King,
at her.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly,
mm-hmm.
with the baby in her lap. And special moments in African-American history. And so Monita Sleet Jr., people like Eli Reid, people like Roy DiCarava, who was an artist but still kind of in that same format, James Vanderzee, and my main man, I got to say Gordon Parks, because he loved women, I love women, and I just love his style. He was a videographer, he was a photographer, he did high fashion, he did, you know, social justice issues. I mean, the man was a Renaissance man. And so my only regret as a young professional is not having the chance to meet him before he passed.
What was it about Arizona State that attracted you there to obtain your Bachelor of Arts degree?
Sure. I mean, initially it was the fact that my family had moved out there, and they essentially left me because they like the traveling people, right? They love to get out. And so they left me in Virginia my freshman year in college.
Uh-huh.
And at the time I was attending Virginia Commonwealth not to apply to either be a photographer or a graphic artist. And so I went through the application process, and the way they do it, they basically place you where they think you should go.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought I should go into photography. And so at the time I was like, well, I'm not going to stay on the East Coast if I'm going to get into photography and go to this school, which wasn't really known at the time for that program. So I started looking up, and just so happened that Arizona State was on the top of the list. So I was like, let me go ahead and go to ASU. And it was probably the best decision I've ever made.
Tell us about that experience. Obviously, when one majors in photography, you have to take pictures. So I guess it's a little bit more exciting than, say, majoring in economics or something like that.
Sure. Sure, absolutely. And I spent a lot of time learning from a gentleman. His name is Stephen Mark Smith. He's a mentor extraordinaire. And to this day, matter of fact, I just talked to him about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we had like a 4 or 5 hour conversation, really big, heavy into the Underground Railroad scene and documenting artifacts and things like that. So for me, I've always found my interest in photographing. It's always been people-centric. It's always been stories and telling stories about people who are underrepresented or come from diverse communities. And so for me, I just love the opportunities that Arizona, and people would think Arizona, you're out in the middle of nowhere, it's a desert,
mm-hmm.
but there's so much culture, so much history that's there. And so I absolutely love my experience there.
I understand. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O. Hanson Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio, and we're speaking with Jared Henderson, producer and director of Beyond This Place, a visual history of African-American fraternities and sororities. Before we get to the documentary, Mr. Henderson, as we were talking before the taping, you were a photographer at my hometown newspaper, the Detroit Free Press. What were some of your other positions?
Sure. So I decided that I wanted to get into journalism, photojournalism, after I graduated undergrad. And so I got the beautiful honor of being a fellow at the University of Missouri. And so I studied there for a couple years. And my first job out of school was with the Austin American Statesman. And I got that connection through a brother who I met there, who's still shooting there. His name is Ricardo Brazil. And he was so instrumental to my development as a young photographer. And we had crossed paths at the National Association of Black Journalists Conference.
Right.
And so we spent a lot of time together. He invited me to come out. I applied for the internship, got it, finished school, and then I applied for the Freep. And I took a shot in the dark. I know there were a lot more qualified people than I was. And just through my relationships and by just having a hard work ethic and trying to improve myself as a visual storyteller, I was able to get the job, and I spent the last 3.5 years in Detroit, which I absolutely love.
Tell us about that experience going around Detroit, seeing Detroit not particularly at its best, but in its declining years thus far.
Sure. Sure. I was definitely I came in like right after that Chrysler Super Bowl commercial with the Eminem and the gospel choir, and everybody was hyped, like Detroit's on a rebound. And so there was a lot of positive energy surrounding the move. And so when I got there, though, probably one of the first two assignments I had was a baptism by fire. I had to cover a really unfortunate story about a young lady, a young girl, child, infant, who was taken and abducted. And so I got to spend a lot of time in communities that nobody wants to go into. But the interesting thing is, as much negative press surrounds Detroit and the things that are going there politically, or that were going on there politically and financially, there were some of the best people I probably ever met in my life from that city, in that city. And it speaks to the resilience of the folks who are there. You're talking about the birthplace of the middle class. And so for me, it's just it was just beautiful to have that experience, where every day wasn't always, you know, the best and brightest, and I didn't get a chance to, you know, photograph, you know, candy making and fudge making every day. But at the same time, or athletics, but at the same, or the great athletics in Michigan and Michigan State, right?
Right.
But at the same time, I really did enjoy my time there a lot.
Are you currently teaching?
I am not. I am not. I am actually a video producer at Virginia Tech. And I've been here a little over 6 months, but I used to teach. I taught 7th grade U.S. history for a little bit in south side of Richmond, Virginia. And so it's just funny how all these things kind of come back around full circle, because I found myself diving in all these different examples of my own life narrative and how they kind of reflect on some of the things that we're trying to do in the documentary.
Yeah, I understand. And since you, good segue about the documentary, when did you come to the realization that you needed to put something together? You entitled it Beyond This Place, talking about the Divine Nine.
So I'm a member of Alpha Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. Okay. I was initiated when I was an undergrad at Arizona State University. And when I was doing my master's in journalism at the University of Missouri, I decided that one of the topics I was interested in looking at was the relationship between representation and stereotyping, where the two terms come from, how can they exist together homogeneously, where can we, how do we figure out what falls into which category? And so for me, looking, I use Black Greek letter organizations as my topic of interest, specifically talking about the limited representation of media that existed. And so for me, it was a way to kind of look at the scope of Black Greek life, what that meant, and to identify what are some things that contribute to concepts like groupthink within Black Greek letter organizations. Why can you have a member of Kappa Alpha Psi who the semester before he crossed is the most non-gaming, can't, you know, get a date to save his life, and then after he crossed the fraternity, be the ladies' man on campus? And so it was just talking about those different energies and that surround our organizations. And really, for me, it's also looking at the organizations, where they've been, where they currently are, and where they're headed to in the future.
Why was it important for you to somewhat travel the lineage of William Ernest Hensley? in his poem,
sure.
Invictus.
The one thing that unites all Black Greek letter organizations are that we're all committed to academic and scholarships. Mm-hmm. We're all committed to community uplift, and we're all committed to the concepts of brotherhood and sisterhood. And even though we have different colors, different letters, different missions and national programs, the one thing that we all share is this commitment to uplift the community. And oddly enough, and I need to do a lot more research on this because I'm not sure who said that this is the thing that should unite us all, but mm-hmm. if you ask many members of Black Greek letter organizations, many of them know the poem Invictus.
Right.
And they can recite it. You know, a lot of members can recite it. Not all members, but a lot of members can recite it off the top of their head. And so I just thought that was a really unique way to pay homage to the unity that ultimately at its grassroots kind of unites all of us together.
Doing your research and putting this documentary together, obviously, other than, I want to say, a family legacy, why individuals pledge certain fraternities and sororities? Have you gotten to that yet?
You know what? I have in just a few interviews that I've done. I've had the benefit of being able to travel all around the nation. And
okay.
the one thing that remains familiar and that holds true for a lot of people, not all people, but most people, is that they've had some type of personal interaction mm-hmm. either when they were young or, you know, outside of having that family legacy kind of a deal where, you know, mom was a AKA, dad mm-hmm. was a Kappa or things like that. And so it is really contingent upon who you meet, who was placed in your life at a time where you needed encouragement or guidance or mentorship. And that's where a lot of people find their interest. And that was the same for me. I had no members of my family who were in Black Greek letter organizations. And my cousin just happened to be a member of Alpha Alpha. And I can vividly remember going to baseball games with him and his frat brothers and uh-huh. going to the classics with him and the frat and just experiencing that whole thing. So for me, I was tuned in from day one.
How did you go about, obviously I would assume that you would have to put together some type of outline to give you some type of direction and structure in putting this documentary together. Tell us about that process.
So right now, at the current stage, a lot of people think that the documentary is finished, and mm-hmm. it actually, in fact, is not. I'm in the pre-production/beginning production stages of this project.
Okay.
And the beautiful thing about bringing this project to the community in its neophyte stages is that I can incorporate a lot of the suggestions and address a lot of the concerns that people have about this type of project. I've been very adamant about saying and telling people that, you know, this project is not just to have conversations and to have a critical examination for critique's sake. This project is very much so about how do we identify the challenge that we face in the 21st century and then offer solutions to those challenges that we face. And so the narrative right now is really about, it's centered around the question, how have Black Greek letter organizations changed in the 21st century? Many people want to have this conversation, are we still relevant, and things like that. And I think in this era where our relevancy is being questioned so much, it's important to get to the root and the heart of the issue, which is, what have we done, what are we doing now, and where do we still need to grow to continue to move forward into the future?
I don't know if you've gotten this far or it will be a part of the documentary. Is there a different mindset with Greek organizations on historically Black colleges and universities versus those that are on majority colleges and universities?
That's a very good question. Because I come from the background of my undergraduate experience being at a predominantly white institution,
okay.
I think that there are definitely similarities between the two experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But this is definitely be an argument that's actually most recently been held across college campuses,
right.
You know, and as early as 2014, I'm sure we're going to have that conversation next year as well. But is there a different mindset? I don't necessarily think there's a different mindset amongst members. There certainly is a different type of attitude towards the understanding
mm-hmm.
of Black Greek letter organizations
right.
at an HBCU because they're so prominently displayed. People know about their programs.
Right.
You know, people go out and they seek membership a little, I think, bit more actively on an HBCU campus
mm-hmm.
Than a PWI. But the inverse could also be true. Because you don't see so many people that look like you on the campus,
right.
you might think that you know, I need to get hooked up with these brothers or these sisters because they represent me and my population. And so definitely think there's similarities in mindset. The differences, I think, are morally external and not necessarily internally expressed.
So thus far, has it been difficult for you to get the visual archives of African-American fraternities and sorority thus far in the past, say, 100 years or so?
You know what? It's been a really awesome process. The cool thing about this is that we have content visually in terms of photographs and documents. The Research Center at Howard University is an awesome, awesome place. I visited a few times. And then also I've been able to link up with people online, like Kevin Davis, a progressive Greek, and gotten into some of the old school Greek life forms and been able to talk to folks who have a collection of archived material. For me, since I want to produce a film-based documentary, the challenge I'm having is trying to find those old reels, those old, you know, reel-to-reels of stepping on the yard in the 1950s, or, I mean, just whatever content that might exist. And so I am looking for a lot more video content that I think will add another dynamic dimension to storytelling.
So those who got those Super 8 videos and those Kodaks, how do they get in touch with you?
Oh, you can absolutely get in touch with me, beyondthisplace.com. Tell grandmama and them I would love some footage. If they have any old home movies, it would be awesome if you all can send them my way. I will have them transferred. I will have them digitized, all that. You won't even have to worry about it. I'll pay for your shipping and handling. But main thing is getting that content.
So how do they get that to you?
Sure. Beyondthisplace.com is the website where we have all of our information about the project and also has my email address and contact information. If you are willing to submit that type of content, please shoot me an email or you can call me. My phone number is on there as well, and we can make arrangements.
One always knew that African-American fraternity and sorority members were adamant about their organization.
Sure.
And I'm quite sure no one had ever phantom about the fallout that has taken place with the sister-to-sister cable television programs about sororities, and I guess they live in Atlanta, and the backlash that has transpired from that. What's your
Absolutely.
Thoughts?
Absolutely. You know what? It's interesting because VH1 has not done a very good job at addressing the criticism. Their response was to put out a dialogue show in which the young ladies talked about the backlash they've been receiving.
And it kind of
misses the point about why people are upset about the representation of these organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Members of these sororities have every right to be upset with their portrayal. And one of the things that's interesting is that because it is a VH1 and we know their particular brand of programming in terms of reality TV, it attaches a certain stigma to the organizations. And so while many people feel like these channels don't need to exist and these shows don't need to exist, it starts to develop a very negative connotation for what the overarching missions of these sororities are. And so it makes a lot of sense that people would be upset. Do I think that the show can exist? I actually do think the show can exist. And the reason is because, and it goes back to the argument that a lot of people make about shows like Love and Hip Hop and why aren't, quote unquote, we doing something about Love and Hip Hop.
Mm-hmm.
Love and Hip Hop can exist because there's hundreds of other shows on television that represent black people in a way that's not Love and Hip Hop.
Exactly.
And I think the same can exist with Sorority Sisters because we saw it with Spike Lee in School Days. We saw it with, you know, Stomp the Yard.
Right.
That organizations can have representation in different ways, and that can be okay. But we need to start supporting alternative narratives to the one that's being presented and pitched by VH1. And that's why I'm trying to do a project like Beyond This Place.
Mr. Henderson, when you look at your participation with a fraternity, obviously there's a different culture and atmosphere when you're undergrad, but once you graduate and move on to the grad chapter, will that be a part of the discussion because, you know, one would think, and obviously so, you know, it's about the party, but there's also some community service that goes on. But when you get to the grad chapters, there are parties, but there's more emphasis on the community service.
Absolutely. And that is absolutely going to be a part of this documentary. When people say things like, I used to be a member of, you know, XYZ organization, right? They're not in Black Greek letter organizations. And that's the thing that separates us from our non-Black Greek counterparts,
right,
is that we maintain our membership through life. And so one of the pieces of the narrative that I do not believe is being handled and talked about enough is the fact that a lot of the mentorship, a lot of the development, the academic, the professional development happens within these grad chapters and from people who are involved in the grad chapters. And so they are an essential element to the storytelling that I'm trying to produce. And there's examples all over the place, because when people ask, what are we doing outside of pledging and hazing and kicking it, you have to be able to point to people like the Delta Alpha Lambda chapter in Cleveland, Ohio, who have been doing holiday food baskets for 32 years.
Right.
You have to be able to point to the Sigma Gamma Rho Project Reassurance, who they just released a new video with one of their prominent members, MC Light, which talks about healthy living and healthy choices to help reduce teen pregnancy. You have to look at Kappa Alpha Psi and Omega Psi Phi and Alpha Alpha in West Virginia for doing the Thanks for Dreaming dinner. And you have to show those examples to people to let them know that, hey, there are other stories that need to be told.
When you look at the longevity of these organizations, because a lot of them are coming up on their centennial year and beyond, is there one particular linchpin that you can articulate that has allowed these organizations to survive and thrive over these years?
You know what? First of all, let me say Happy Founders Day to the Brothers of Phi Beta Sigma, which is today, January 9th. But when you look at the longevity of these organizations, I think it is no small thing to talk about the socioeconomic impact, the historical impact on American history that these organizations and members of these organizations have had. And when you look at everything that's been accomplished over the last 100 plus years and coming up on 100 years for a lot of folks, the one thing that stands out is the commitment to excellence and the commitment to people.
Jared Henderson, producer-director of Beyond This Place, the visual history of African-American fraternities and sororities. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson, H-A-N-S-O-N, at kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.